It was nice this week to hear some good news in the midst of all the ongoing death and destruction news coming out of the Middle East, Iraq, Indonesia, Afghanistan. Right at the bottom of the page, tucked away in a rather hidden corner, most newspapers reported the signing of a ceasefire between Cabinda separatists and the government of Angola. The ceasefire should end a 31-year-old independence struggle in a nation that's still striving to recover from a 27-year civil war. A ceasefire, it's clear to all, is plain good news. What isn't so plain, I soon discovered, is the situation in the southern African nation of Angola, which has a complex colonial history and rich geological resources that make it interesting to Western powers. I know, I'll ask my friend and colleague Paul Anthem to tell me more about it. He works on the news desk, and I happen to know he was focusing on Angola for one of his reports.
It's one of Africa's major oil producers, but Angola's also one of the world's poorest countries. It's actually striving to tackle the physical, social and political legacy of the 27-year-old civil war that ravaged the country after independence. The ruling popular movement for the liberation of Angola and the rebel group UNITA were bitter rivals, even before the country gained independence from Portugal, which was in 1975. The Soviet Union and Cuba supported the then Marxist MPLA, while the US and white-ruled South Africa backed UNITA, and that was as a bulwark against Soviet influence in Africa. Now, after 16 years of fighting, which killed up to 300,000 people, a peace deal did lead to elections, but UNITA rejected the outcome and resumed the war, and hundreds of thousands more were killed. Another peace accord was signed in 1994, and the UN then sent in peacekeepers. But the fighting steadily worsened again, and it was in 1999 that the peacekeepers withdrew, leaving behind a country that's rich in natural resources but littered with landmines and the ruins of war. The death of UNITA leader Jonas Savimbi in February 2002 did raise the prospect of peace, and the army and rebels signed a ceasefire in April to end the conflict. Now, that ceasefire still holds, but Angola is facing the daunting task of rebuilding its infrastructure, retrieving weapons from its heavily armed civilian population, and resettling tens of thousands of refugees who fled the fighting. Landmines and impassable roads have cut off large parts of the country, and many Angolans now rely on food aid. What's more, much of Angola's oil wealth lies in Cabinda province. Now, this is a coastal enclave which has no border with the rest of Angola, but it produces around half of the country's 1.4 million barrels of oil a day. The region has been home to a separate decades-long conflict, to which the government has sent thousands of troops to subdue the rebellion, and this is where human rights groups allege that abuses against civilians have been rampant.
Paul further explained to me the ceasefire in question is between a separatist umbrella group called the Cabinda Forum for Dialogue and the Angolan government. Whether it will work or not is to be seen, also because other armed separatists have already rejected the deal. But meanwhile, Paul said he'd spoken to Jesuit Father Michael Gallagher, JRS Regional Advocacy Officer for Southern Africa, a man who's been in the region for quite a few years and has first-hand experience with the refugees. He asked him what difference a peace could make to the lives of these people. What possibilities do they have of being able to resume the remnants of a normal existence?
I've been in the area here since the cessation of the major war between the UNITA people and the government of Angola, and with the death of Savimbi in February 22nd of 2002. And I suppose that the situation for the internally displaced people in Angola would be quite similar. First of all, there'll be a period of time in which the people who have been displaced, either refugees, which mean they've left Angola, or internally displaced people, which mean they're remaining somewhere within Angola but not in Cabinda, will wait to see whether this actually plays out or not. But if the last ceasefire, which is held now for 4 years, is any indication, I would think that within 6 months we would see certain people, usually male heads of family, heading back towards their home villages to resume life, and then afterwards the rest of the families would be following within 9 months if this peace accord does hold.
And what, Paul asked Father Gallagher, are the day-to-day conditions of the refugees at this time?
Well, the internally displaced people, remember, technically speaking, the refugee is somebody who's going to be outside of his country. And we do not, to my knowledge, have any Cabinda Angola refugees anywhere in this region. I don't believe that there are any in Namibia, and I haven't encountered any here in South Africa. The Angola refugees we have here, most part, remainder from the earlier one. Those who are in camps would be isolated, for example, in Namibia. There'd be restrictions on their freedom of movement. The cessation of the war would mean that they could go back home. If the donor community were there, they will help them with repatriation funding and also some food funding.
But, Father Gallagher pointed out, the donor community is sadly lacking.
Unfortunately, right now, the donor community has not responded to the World Food Program's plea to help fund some current projects in Angola. And so as a result, people are starting to go hungry throughout the country. Then these would include the refugees who are coming back from Zambia and from Congo and from Namibia.
He explained the donors have not given any money to help with the return packages for these refugees, and that's going to pose serious problems of malnutrition. But food and a peace accord are not the only things refugees need to ensure their lives return to normality. What can the international community do to help to try and improve the situation?
Timely responses to the World Food Program's pleas for provide food for the already returning refugees and to assist in the rebuilding of the country. As respect to Cabinda, then there should be some funding provided for UNHCR to allow them to repatriate people eventually. Money is the main thing that needs to be getting on here, as well as, you know, continue to encourage the government of Angola to go the extra mile with the Cabinda people so that there can be peace finally in that country.
And of course, if there is finally peace and the refugees do manage to go home, does that mean that Father Gallagher, for example, who works with Jesuit refugee services, will find himself without work?
Well, the Jesuit Refugee Service would happily withdraw from Angola once there's peace, because there's no longer any refugees. And people are back in ordinary life, and we're more of a relief organization than a development organization. And so development organizations would have to come in and help to do initial kind of rebuilding. We've been doing school buildings in certain parts of Angola right now. But once peace is settled and people are back together, we hand over that operation to other NGOs and to the government of Angola. And we go elsewhere where there is people who've had to flee from their countries because of war. The short answer is we go out of business when the refugees stop being refugees, and we're happy to do it.
However, Father Gallagher explained, there's a period of time between the time in which the peace accord is signed and the time JRS actually leaves. A time of transition in which there's still much to be done.
We are more or less winding down our operations with the Angolan refugees from the main war, from the 76 war, throughout southern Africa. And that's 4 years later. I don't know exactly what the timetable would be. I mean, there's landmines and all of those sorts of things that need to be cleared, but we're not in the mine clearing business. We have been doing some rebuilding stuff. I think that is pretty much wrapping up, and I would expect within the next year or two, JRS would be greatly diminished in Angola in our activities, if we have anything at all left.
Finally, Paul asked Father Gallagher, are you hopeful for peace?
Well, yes, the Cabinda situation is different from the other one, and this is more recent. I am hopeful because the peace has been holding well after the end of the UNITA conflict in February of 2002, and April 4th, I think, 2002 is when they signed the peace accords. And that's held now for 4 years, and the reports that we have are of no serious problems with the returning refugees or new instances of conflict breaking out. That's very hopeful. So I'm hopeful for the Angolan people of Cabinda as well.
One thing I think it's important to point out is that this peace accord was held under the auspices of the Africa Union. There were no Norwegians or United Nations people spearheading or brokering negotiations, but African leaders and delegates getting together for the future of their own continent. Surely there's much hope in that. Another sign of hope comes from nature. Wildlife researchers have noticed that thousands of wildebeest, that's a kind of large antelope, are making their way to Angola in an expanding migration. It's a sign of renewal, a sign that wildlife has survived Angola's conflicts and is now thriving. It's like nature finally reasserting itself.